Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Martin Lee, and this is the Autosport Podcast. A Mercedes 1-2 for the first time since Imola in 2020. George Russell excelling, followed home by Lewis Hamilton. Two excellent restarts, a great first start as well, all timed perfectly, keeping Perez and Hamilton behind him. An amazing drive from George Russell today, and driver of the day, Lewis Hamilton, coming home in second. He called it an amazing result for the team. Who'd have thunked it, eh? A Mercedes 1-2. Carlos Sainz was third, but behind him, his teammate Charles Leclerc was on the radio asking for a swap of positions. He came home in fourth. Fernando Alonso, we'll talk about how he came home fifth, because that one kind of escaped me a little bit. But a great drive as he gets ready to leave his team. And then Max Verstappen, followed home by Sergio Perez, and a big storyline afterwards as well, with Max defying a direct request from the team and Christian Horner publicly apologising to Perez over the radio. We'll find out what's happened and since. Another brilliant Ocon results in 8th, followed home by Bottas, and Stroll in 10th. That's the Brazilian Grand Prix finishing order, and it was full of incidents. It was both, because sometimes a race can be either action-packed or a bit of a chess game. I thought today was action-packed, but also I was trying to follow the pit stop chess game as well. I had a little bit of everything for somebody. I hope you would agree if you watched it today. And we're going to analyse it on the Autosport podcast. I'm joined by Autosport.com editor Hayden Cobb, F1 reporter Luke Smith, and our Grand Prix editor Alex Kalanorkas. Chaps, welcome to the podcast. First of all, we're going to do around the grounds and talk about the incidents and get your thoughts on it. So Hayden, we'll start with you. On lap one, Daniel Ricciardo, Kevin Magnussen, both retiring from the race. Since then, Ricciardo will finish this stage of his Formula One career, hopefully not forever, with a three-place grid drop in Abu Dhabi. Who was at fault for that one, Hayden?
I mean, yeah, you have to plant it firmly on Daniel Ricciardo, don't you? Quite an ambitious lunge. I mean, common of an opening lap, but went an area that has actually seen quite a few crashes like that in recent history in Formula One at that circuit. So, yeah, I mean, Matt Magnussen was not a fault at all. Got spun round, then clattered for good measure by Ricciardo. The penalty for Abu Dhabi is pretty much justified.
All right, 1-0. Luke Smith?
2-0 completely. Like, it was just okay. just such a clumsy thing. And it's like, oh, no, not again. And yeah, very, very silly on the opening lap. I just, yeah, didn't really fully understand it. But yeah, all on Daniel's front.
Alex, will you make it a hat trick? Is it 3-0?
Oh, yes, it is. Yeah, really, really poor again from Ricciardo. And it was, it reminded me very much of his incident with Tsunoda in Mexico. It was almost seemed easier not to have an accident. Unfortunate that they both got taken out of the race. But yeah, definitely all in Ricciardo, that one.
Which caused a safety car on the restart, lap 7, Verstappen and Hamilton. There's something about when they share the same bit of tarmac that made me more nervous than when Verstappen and Russell were battling in the sprint yesterday. And you just watch it, kind of holding your breath a little bit. And of course, they came together. Verstappen penalised, interestingly, with a 5-second time penalty, which he served at his stop. Was a bit longer, actually, because of the right rear coming off slow. So it was a long old stop for him. Verstappen versus Hamilton, turn 2. Big contact. who was at fault?
Much, much, much more marginal than the Ricciardo one, obviously. And the stewards, they ruled that it was Verstappen to blame, gave him a 5-second time penalty. And personally, though, I think that, yeah, it was more of a racing incident. I think both of them could have done more to avoid that accident. I think that Hamilton didn't give Verstappen a lot of room, but also Verstappen was going for a lunge that maybe wasn't really on. During the race, I actually pulled up an article we did back in, I think, March, April time, looking at the guidelines that drivers were given about racing moves this year and basically how much of a car alongside do you need in order to sort of have a right to a corner. Obviously, that's not binding for the stewards, but it was kind of going to be guidelines that they would judge these kind of incidents by. And I think that Max, that, yeah, he did, I think, have a significant portion of that Red Bull alongside Hamilton's Mercedes. But the other element it says is that you've got to keep within track limits. I don't think Max would have quite done that. So yeah, I think it was more 50-50 than the stewards maybe looked at. I think that it was one of those that if they were going to go for one way, maybe towards Verstappen in terms of being to blame. But yeah, I would say more of a 50-50 incident that both could have done more to avoid.
Yeah, it's not like Max even avoided the apex. He was, you know, properly over the white line. Let's go to Alex next. Whose fault was this one?
I think both at fault in a way. So I think it sort of cancels each other out and should have been viewed as a racing incident.
So therefore, no penalty. Then no penalty applied to either one.
I think that would have been fairer considering the Lewis Hamilton not backing down possibly cost him a race win. And I think Max Verstappen also not backing down. I mean, Max summarised it himself. That's basically what he said. He was like, he knew Lewis wasn't going to give him any space, and he said he wasn't prepared to back down. So I think the damage that they both caused to each other's races was penalty enough. That said, I can understand why he got a penalty, because as Lucas said, you know, those racing guidelines issued for this year, the way they are with, you know, Lewis's wheels were ahead at the apex. And also, yeah, in their decision, the steward said, yeah, Max attacked on the outside of turn one, but he hadn't got the move completed. So I think it's just, I can understand why they've given it, but it does seem harsh to me.
Yeah, again, it's a clean sweep of the boards. I would say racing incident, move on, but like both the other guys said, I can see why the stewards went with the penalty. I guess the other thing is, not that they would ever take this into consideration, but context is just always, you knew these two were going to do this. It's probably, certainly in my memory, this season, the first time they've proper gone toe-to-toe in a sort of even fight, let's say, without too much sort of tyre offset between the two. And you sort of felt, with all the history between them, it was going to happen. Neither of them, yeah, was going to back out. Therefore, there's only one outcome when that happens. And yeah, they both damaged their races with damage to their cars, etc. So yeah, maybe just calling it a racing incident and just going, look, if you're going to run into each other, they're the consequences that you get. You've penalised yourself, really. So it certainly will be one that won't be forgotten, though.
I think just on Verstappen, I think, the penalty, I think, from a steward is harsh, but he may reflect on that and think, oh, I just was a little bit too keen to get on with it or whatever. I think he had all race to make that move. He says, you know, Mercedes, he was never going to beat them because the degradation was different. Well, I think the Mercedes definitely had Sergio Perez beaten. I mean, almost a given going into the race there. But Max Verstappen is that much better on tyre management. He's that much better when it comes to just being able to pull off a victory, that I think perhaps he would have had a chance later on had he been able to stay out of an incident there. So maybe he'll just reflect on that and think, I probably should have done it. That said, it's Max Verstappen. He's unlikely to. And again, I think we have to ask the question, does he race Lewis Hamilton differently to other drivers? And I think on the evidence of today, he clearly does. And I think I think Lewis Hamilton also, it's the situation at COPS from 2021. He's just like, I'm not going to back down now. That's just, you know, how it's going to be. If Mercedes can get the W14 package into title contention, I would predict 2021 all over again. Nothing has particularly changed in how they race each other.
And five corners later, Norris was penalised by the stewards, but he said, what's Leclerc trying to do going around the outside there? The move was never on. So here, he biffed Leclerc into the barrier. It was a big, big shunt. Bearing in mind, Leclerc came home fourth, by the way. That was a huge impact. Anyway, they're building strong, as the cliche goes. Alex, we'll stay with you. On this one, whose fault was that?
Don't know what you're on about there, Lando. That was definitely your fault. I think Leclerc's going to come around the outside because he's been jumped at turn one. He's on the slower, the slightly inferior tyre. He's keen to get on with it, and he's in a much faster car. So, of course, he's going to try it. And I think he gave plenty of space. Norris Speed's understeer a little bit, got onto the curb, and that undid him, sent him into Leclerc. So that the penalty is fully justified. Maybe Lando got a bit surprised, I don't know. But yeah, that one seemed much more clear cut, a bit like the other McLaren driver.
Comparing it to the Hamilton Verstappen one, Leclerc at point of sort of intact and where they were coming together was further ahead as well. So if anything, it's like more to blame on Norris's side. And as you commented there, how that Ferrari, he was still in the race after that contact, because not only the contact with Norris, but then hitting the barrier, was amazing. It was almost sort of Alpine-esque with Alonso's shunt in Austin. But yeah, no, Norris fully to blame, takes the penalty. I think racing drivers have a big book of excuses, and I'm sure they can dig into it like Lando Norris has done there. But unfortunately, it won't run for us.
Luke?
I wouldn't say pretty standard, but people do overtake there. We saw Fernando Alonso, I think, pulled a move there later in the race, actually. So that excuse doesn't really stand up. I'm more intrigued what Charles Leclerc called him over the radio, because it was a full out bleep. He didn't even hear a single letter of that. So
very naughty word.
Don't know how fruity he got, but
I'll watch it back.
Yeah. Just, a really clumsy move from Lando. And I thought, yeah, I think as many did, that's Leclerc's race run. And yeah, he did very well to back it out and eventually get all the way back up to P4. So yeah, very good effort from him. But yeah, Lando can absolutely, bang to rights on that one.
There you go. I thought we'd change the format up for the podcast. There's two to go, and start with all of the incidents and make you guys judge and jury. Though you've all agreed, you'd be rubbish as Red Bull teammates. There's no fighting. Let's talk about the eventual winner, George Russell. I thought it was just a masterful weekend for George Russell, actually. Whether it was yesterday in the sprint taking on Max Verstappen, or whether it was today keeping Perez just outside DRS, and then Hamilton later in the race just outside DRS. Two safety car restarts at a track where potentially a long drag down to a first corner that is good for overtaking, and he managed all of it absolutely perfectly. Luke, we'll stay with you. Just George, how impressed were you with George today? Not just his race, but his weekend as well, and of course his first win in Formula One.
Fantastic. We all know what George Russell is capable of. We saw the glimpses of it at Williams. We saw that one-off cameo for Mercedes at Sakhir in 2020, how close he came to winning on debut for the team there. And then I think we've seen throughout this season just how good he has been, how consistent he's been, turning the Mr. Saturday cliche that is so overused by TV types into Mr. Sunday, so consistent, and then becomes Mr. Saturday again by winning the sprint yesterday, going wheel to wheel with Verstappen and winning, really bided his time very, very well there. But then in the race today, yeah, it was just real control. There was rarely a point where you thought he's really under pressure here. Looked after his tyres very well, stretched out the stints very nicely, always had a sort of Perez in his pocket. I think the only time there was any kind of question about is he going to win this race was when the late safety car came out, and that meant that Lewis Hamilton was going to be right behind him. And Russell asked over the radio, are we protecting the 1-2 or are we going to race? And Mercedes has always said to its drivers, you're free to race unless we've got the championship to think about. So there was that freedom to race, but he really nailed the restart, and then was over a second clear of Hamilton by the time DRS kicked in. So could then just bring it home from there. But interestingly, talking to Toto Wolff after the race, he revealed that there was actually a water leak on Russell's car that they noticed about halfway through the race, and they were fearing that it might cause him to retire with about 4 or 5 laps to go, which obviously would have been heartbreaking given the circumstances of his defeat in Bahrain a couple of years ago. But they didn't tell George. So he was just driving around, dominating this race, staying in complete control with an issue on his car that could have ended his race. And the team decided not to tell him because they were like, we just want to get him to the end. Let the car cool itself with whatever is in there. If the water's gone, if it's leaked away, then just let it somehow work. But we can't distract him. We can't put him off or anything like that. And it worked perfectly. So I think it's been, a real exemplary display from George all the way through this weekend, as it's been throughout this season, to be honest. And I think it really shows that Mercedes made 100% the right call putting him in the car for this year. Toto Wolff said afterwards he was reflecting on this 16-year-old who came in wearing a suit and with a PowerPoint when he first met George all those years ago, and he said like Williams was a very good school for him, but he said maybe he was there a year too long. And you're kind of thinking, is there maybe a bit of Mercedes that thinks, we should have done this a year sooner and made that change? But no, I think today we've seen everything that we've not learned learned anything new about George Russell. Like, we know he can win races, we know how good he is, but at last he is a Formula One Grand Prix winner and he so deserves it.
On that water leak, I mean, unless, because you hear it all the time with drivers being told to, you know, fail sensor so and so, but I guess if there's nothing that he could have done from the cockpit, there's absolutely no point telling him, apart from, you know, maybe backing off could have got points. At this stage of the season, if they blow up an engine, then it, you know, there's one more race to go. So let him race. Oh, that's fascinating insight. Alex, you followed George Russell's career for a very long time. What did you make of today's maiden victory?
Yeah, terrific victory today. I do dispute you calling it a masterful weekend, though, Martin, after what he did in qualifying, okay. Going off into the gravel and then booting it around. So, as I've already discussed with
this is because you are used to writing the driver ratings, and you have to be level-headed and analytical, and I get to just spout crap as the host of the podcast. So,
and you do it so well, Martin.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Anyway, yes, yeah. Let's not forget that he did have that mistake in qualifying, which arguably, you know, secured him third place on the sprint grid. I know the rain was coming in anyway, it would have been very difficult. But yeah, today, 10 out of 10, tremendous. Same in the sprint. You know, I think Red Bull will probably reflect on this weekend, and it looked like, even though, you know, there was sort of, it was conflicting information coming out that they chose to start on the mediums to have a preferable Grand Prix race strategy. And it just seems that, you know, now we've seen how it all plays out, The risk was too great. It meant that Verstappen ended up down the order in the wars in the sprint race, even more in the wars in the main race. But Russell, great passes, great, you know, patience to attack Verstappen yesterday and then make the move stick. And then, as you said in your intro, Martin, you know, the start was one of the best starts of the season. He was completely gone in the opening three corners. Nailed the restarts very sensibly, didn't give Lewis Hamilton, you know, any opportunity at those two. And he just drove brilliantly. And I was following, I was listening onto his onboards with his radio communication with his engineer, also looking at his lap times. He just had it under control. You know, even when Hamilton had come into the pits and then, you know, been pitted a little bit early to ward off the undercut threat from Perez, he wasn't homing in on Russell. You know, I think it would have been probably closer come the end of the race than, you know, the gap that Russell had after his second stop, but still I think he had it all under control. The fact that the car might not have made the finish makes that all the more impressive, but yeah, definitely Mercedes making the right call not to distract him there. Almost, if that had happened, that would have been a very George Russell thing to happen, considering what happened in Bahrain a couple of years ago. But yeah, very pleased for George. I spoke to him on Friday night for a sort of end of season season review feature that will be coming out soon in Autosport magazine and autosport.com plus, and I'm sure many news stories as well. It's really interesting to hear his take on how the year's gone, you know, because obviously there was this big thing made of all those top five finishes and him being ahead of Hamilton in the championship. And it's interesting, he's sort of suggesting that, and the team backs this up as well, that as Luke mentioned, you know, the time spent at Williams served him very well when it came to having a difficult car that you couldn't engineer the perfect balance into. You just had to sort of get onto it. Russell was able to do that and Hamilton wasn't able to do that as well. So it's really interesting hearing that. And also just, I don't know, I think Russell, he's had a run of pretty poor races when you think Austin, Singapore, things like that. Speaking to him on Thursday night, it sounded like he'd sort of reflected on that already, and a few things that people have been saying from the outside about his radio messages and things like that, you got the feeling he'd already compartmentalized that, thought about it, decided how he was going to be different in the future. And I think that came across today. He was very calm. He was very level-headed. I think he was playing the game quite smartly in asking about, you know, are we going to be racing or protecting the 1-2? Mercedes, as Luke said, was never going to entertain that really. But yeah, fantastic from Russell and good job to Mercedes. What an unlikely scenario considering how awful that car was in the Bahrain test and the early part of the season.
Well, that's a good point, isn't it, Hayden? Because they had the machinery this weekend. We'll get onto Red Bull in a minute, and there is a bigger story, obviously, with the drivers. But there's actually an interesting storyline around Red Bull performance. But let's talk a little bit about Mercedes' performance. And you know, in an equal car, Lewis, how do I say this? I don't want to say followed him home, because that implies he wasn't trying. I must admit, when I was watching it, there was part of me thinking, right, he's gapped Sainz behind him to 3 seconds. Is he going to stick it all on the line and risk a big shunt with George? Was that full attack, Lewis, or not?
I'll give the little asterisk already early, which was obviously he had the clash with Verstappen early doors. Didn't seem to impact car performance too much, given he was setting fastest laps and generally was on a rapid pace through the couple of stints in that race. But maybe because they're in equal machinery, maybe they was carrying a little bit of damage, could just use, yeah, lack that little bit of top end performance, let's say. But yeah, Hamilton obviously also had to sort of fight his way back through the pack, having dipped down a few spots with after the clash with Verstappen. That gave Russell time to basically, okay, the safety cars sort of nullified a lot of that, but manage his own race, manage his own tyres. So yeah, there was more of an advantage Russell had. He had the clean and largely trouble-free re-race, which Hamilton didn't. So I guess you could flip another one and say if Hamilton did win today after everything had come through and say had beaten Russell in those like final 10 laps, for example, then yeah, it would have said, oh, it's Hamilton, true masterclass, fighting back through adversity. But no, Russell did the job with the tools that he's got. And I think, yeah, full credit to him, as everyone has said, really. It has been obviously intriguing that Mercedes obviously have said in recent races, particularly Mexico and Brazil, like, oh, we're getting close to the win, but maybe we've missed our best chances and performance is getting there. But yeah, they were obviously too far behind in terms of the championship. But yeah, that car has come on leaps and bounds, especially since the upgrade that arrived in Austin. And as Alex said, yeah, if they can get it right next year, then they can probably take it to Red Bull going on their form over the past three races, let's say.
I haven't looked at whether there is definitive damage on Hamilton's car afterwards. He did carve his way through, though, from eighth, and even missed out on some bad safety car timing as well, because he wanted to hang on to those mediums when they brought him in for softs. Alex, who is doing the driver ratings this weekend? Is it your Q doing driver ratings?
That's all Matt Q.
That's all that Q. Lovely responsibility. Okay. But if it was you, what would you give Hamilton?
Probably an 8.
Okay.
I think because he has to lose a point for not being on it as quickly as Russell was in Q3 for to end up qualifying down the order.
Yeah.
And also he has to take some pain for the crash with Verstappen, because as I said, I think that probably cost him the win. If you think just historically over the course of a race, you'd say Hamilton was the favourite compared to Russell. But yeah, just also on the sort of the chase to the end after the safety car, I think Hamilton, yeah, his car definitely was damaged. You could see bits of the front bit of the floor were missing. How much even Mercedes wasn't sort of quantifying that. What I would say is I just think Russell, he nailed getting out of DRS range, and that's what did Hamilton. And maybe Hamilton was hoping that the tyre situation would come to him at the end. And there was one lap where Russell did lose a couple of tenths, and I suddenly thought, oh, hang on a minute, this might not be over yet, but he held on. Russell just benefited once he got out of that DRS threat from being in front. You know, we know the slipstream effect is reduced, but Hamilton was closing in every sector one and every sector three, and Russell was pulling out in every sector two. And again, like the dirty air effect on a following car is reduced, but it's still there. So I think once he'd done enough to get out of DRS range, that's what sealed it. I think they were both pushing. They were both setting personal bests right at the start of the stint for a good sort of 5-6 lap period. And then just as the tyres went away, they got slower and slower and slower. But they did it at the same rate.
Yeah, they both two-stopped, didn't they? Russell stopped first to get rid of the softs on lap 24, then went medium, then back to softs, and Hamilton was five laps later coming in on lap 29, and then did a short middle stint on the C3 mediums, even coming in before George Russell, which Hamilton on the radio was saying his tyres were fine, he wanted to carry on with them. So for Mercedes, yeah, both of them made, we're talking about, maybe contra strategies before the race, and, you know, they could split it and cover both bases, but it was a two-stop which worked out. Of course, safety cars played into that as well a little bit, I guess. But Luke, any final thoughts on Mercedes before I move on to Ferrari that you want to chip in or not?
Yeah, it's just incredible that they've got as many 1-2 finishes this year as Ferrari do, and they can still beat them to second place in the championship as we go into the final round in Abu Dhabi. And yeah, they've done an amazing job to overhaul things, to turn things around, to work out why the car was so slow, the baked-in problem that they've had that was beyond the porpoising that they thought in the early part of the season. If they cured, then they would be there. And I think that they've come a very long way, and Toto Wolff, he wasn't actually in Brazil this weekend. He missed this race. It's only the third race he's missed since joining his role at Mercedes, the others being Suzuka earlier this year and the 2018 Brazilian Grand Prix. And this is the first one of those races, though, that Mercedes has won without him being on site. And we saw in the cool down room, George Russell was on FaceTime to Wolff afterwards to talk to him. And then Mercedes hastily arranged a Zoom call with Toto so we could actually chat to him after the race, because that was never the plan. And Toto was like, I don't actually remember. Have we won a race without me present before? And head of comms at Mercedes said, yes, China 2012, you weren't with the team. That's how long ago, and for all the success Mercedes has had, and Toto has always been there. So yeah, funny for him not to be on site. But he said that made him even prouder, the fact that he can comfortably sort of hand the reins over to someone else, and there is so much depth in that team, and they've just come such a long way, and it's so exciting for next year as well to think that, yeah, if Red Bull keep being as good as they've been, if Mercedes keep on this trajectory, if Ferrari get their act together, what a brilliant fight we might have for next year's World Championship.
They gave the spotlight to Andrew Shovlin, to James Vowles, obviously in Toto's absence, and it was really nice to see those different members of the team being able to make a comment. They're all more than able to make a comment, but it's always the team principal's job. I noticed that the Sky F1 boycott was lifted because they needed to do a little bit of management of that situation. So Christian Horner was straight on to Sky. Everything's fine between the drivers, so that was quite funny. We'll get onto that in a minute. Let's talk a little bit about the Ferraris then. Carlos Sainz made a three-stop work here, and Leclerc followed him home. And of course, we heard on the radio towards the end, Leclerc was pitching his proposal to the team that they should swap positions. Of course, they go into Abu Dhabi equal on points. Leclerc and Perez tied on 290. How about that going into the last race of the season with two drivers tied on points? What was your reading of Ferrari today? Great drive by Carlos Sainz, I would say, and also what a recovery drive as well from Charles Leclerc.
Yeah, both drivers had adversity to fight through for different reasons. Obviously, you mentioned the Leclerc getting hit by Norris and heavily hit into the wall, so effectively going to the back early on and fighting through and getting up to fourth. But Sainz had the grid penalty for an engine change, so he started seventh, having finished the sprint second, so would have been a bit further ahead of the fight, and then had to pit early and slightly change his strategy because he got a visor tear off stuck in his brake duct, which is the exact same thing that happened to Charles Leclerc at Spa earlier this season. A coincidence to say the least. Maybe the design of the Ferrari brake ducts is too hoovery for visors. I'm not quite sure, but either way, yeah. He had his strategy and pace obviously got there. It looked like his race could be over when his brake was on fire for quite a while. I thought this could end in tears. But yeah, in the end, he got on the podium. So in terms of where they finished with the adversity, it looks like a good result overall. Obviously, they don't want to be finishing behind a 1-2 in Mercedes, considering they should on paper have still one of the fastest cars. And in that fight for second place in the constructors is under threat now. And the sum of it is what I would say is probably 3 and 4, given everything that happened, is not the worst result they could have come away with. The team orders talk, which, as you've alluded to, we'll get onto with Red Bull in particular. Leclerc was asking Ferrari if he could be put ahead of Sainz going into those last few laps, knowing that the positions looked fairly sorted, with one eye on the driver's fight against Perez. And it was a thing Ferrari didn't consider, nor did they even tell Sainz, I believe. It was more of a, no, we can't deny Carlos this penalty, this podium. And I think it was sort of fair enough. At the end of the day, yes, second place in the Drivers' Championship, it's better than third, but I don't know, does it really matter to them? Maybe it does, I don't know. But I'd rather have a podium won fair and square than say losing it that way. But that's just me. But in summary, not the best of days given who finished ahead of them, but not the worst of days given what happened to both their cars. So, yeah, but they won't go away from Interlagos feeling satisfied, that's for sure.
Interesting one, isn't it, Alex? Because so much this season has been a story of how the Red Bulls, and particularly Max, has been able to make these tyres work at times when Ferrari couldn't. And yet this is a weekend when we saw Mercedes genuinely win on pace and Ferrari genuinely be where they are on pace. Was it all down to tyres? Or, Alex, what are your thoughts on Ferrari's performance?
I think it's a few things. And obviously, you're talking about three different teams there in that question. So I think just with Red Bull, first of all, I've seen nothing to suggest that that was a race that they were always destined to lose. I think Christian Horner's come out and said, look, I think we just got the setup wrong in that 1 hour of practice. They got their sums wrong on the tyres and things like that because of the sprint weekend format. So it can happen. We've seen Red Bull do it a few times over the last few seasons. That was ultimately was what undid them this weekend. But I still think that the Red Bull package is the faster package compared to the Mercedes. You know, I think Verstappen didn't help himself with the haste of his move as I've already clarified, I don't think he was necessarily wholly at fault for what happened with Hamilton. So that's Red Bull, right? I think if they get everything right, they should still win that race. Mercedes has carried on developing its car. Again, another season review interview I did with Mike Elliott, technical director at Mercedes, taking over from James Allison last year. He confirmed that, you know, the way it looks on the outside is that Barcelona update package was aimed at fixing the porpoising, which it did, although it took them a while to sort of get it all together, and then it revealed the bouncing stiffness problem that they had. Then that update that they brought to Austin was about making the car faster, and that seems to have worked. So it's really come into their favour. At the same time, Ferrari hasn't been developing its car. I think it's given up. They've already come out, Binotto and Mekies have said around sort of Singapore time, look, you know, we've stopped developing the car. We're fully focused on 2023. So I think there's a few factors that all come together there that mean Mercedes win that race. Don't get me wrong, they aced it on their setup. They aced it on their choices. They aced it on their strategy. I do wonder if you had to insist on playing a sort of tinfoil hat conspiracy game, the decision to stop Hamilton and cover Perez, I think that to me from the outside looked a little bit like, right, we're going to bank an easy second place. And oh, funnily enough, that makes things much easier for George Russell. That was the one that looked slightly more suspect. But anyway, that's obviously completely ridiculous with conspiracy theories, as all conspiracy theories are. So that's it. Yeah, Mercedes aced everything. It seemed Red Bull got things wrong. And yet also Mercedes have engineered their car to get it into the fight. And again, like I'm just this whole weekend, this whole end of the season, a season that promised so much, ultimately became a one driver show. You know, all these dead rubbers that have actually got me excited for next year. If this can be the three-way fight that it's sort of pointing towards, won't that be fantastic?
Before then, let's talk about this race. And Luke and Ferrari today, could that without Leclerc's incidents on lap 7, could they have been on the podium twice, do you think? Or do they have the pace to get ahead of the Mercedes at times?
No, I think the Mercedes had too much there. I think the Mercedes all round was the quickest package. They don't really know why they were so much quicker than everyone else. But I think that, yeah, Sainz, I think, did a good job. I thought his race was very well managed, and they did well to come in under the safety car as well at the end and, get that stop in. But I think that realistically, I think that, yeah, Mercedes just had too much for them today. So really, third and fourth, that's probably the maximum Ferrari could have managed. Maybe a bit flattering even, if you sort of consider that Red Bull would probably have been in there somewhere with Verstappen. But, I think that's probably about right for Ferrari.
After today's race, maybe it was on the radio during it, the quote from Perez is, "I believe that if Max has two world championships, it's down to me." What would make him say that? Why are they bickering and fighting? And what's been the resolution? We'll talk about that next on the podcast after the break. Stick around.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Well, the podcast today is sponsored once again by our friends at Babbel. Now, if you watch Formula One for the whole shebang all afternoon, you'll know that earlier before the race, maybe 45 minutes before they line up on the grid, the drivers do their driver's parade, so often in some sort of open-topped classic car being driven around as they sit in the back and wave at the fans and often get interviewed as well. And Lewis Hamilton, today while being interviewed, said, "Hey, thanks for all my fans coming out." Loads of fans in Brazil, but hey, I'm sorry, I don't speak better Portuguese. You know, Lewis, you could always try Babbel to learn a new language. For most of us, learning a second language hasn't always been a high point, so we need a little bit of extra help, whether that is with work or for pleasure, talking to family or friends or forging connections. Babbel makes learning a language quick and easy because it's natural conversation. 15-minute lessons are efficient and effective, created by 150 language experts. So this is stuff you'll actually use, you know, in real life. Not like it seems like when I was at school and I was thinking, how do I use some of this? They're interactive lessons, not just talking to a robot. And with Babbel, you can choose 14 different languages, from Spanish, French, Italian, German, and way more as well. With their speech recognition technology, it helps you get better faster. Now, of course, we have a promo code. There's always a promo code, isn't there? But if you are going to sign up to Babbel, you've thought, right, that's it. Maybe for our holiday next year, or I just want to improve myself over the rest of this year, then of course you can use our promo code. It gives you 6 months free with a purchase of a 6 month subscription. You go to babbel.com/play and promo code AUTOSPORT, all one word. That is babbel.com, babbel.com/play. Use the promo code AUTOSPORT to get that deal with Babbel, where language learning that works. Now back to the podcast. All right, let's get back to the podcast then. And, oh, Red Bull. Red Bull have created a situation out of nothing when it didn't need to be there. Have Red Bull done that? Or has Max Verstappen created that situation out of nothing? Or has Sergio Perez created that situation out of nothing? Like I say, the battle for second in the Drivers' Championship, locked on 290 points apiece, Leclerc and Perez. What a year it would be to win the Drivers, the Constructors, and get a 1-2 for Red Bull. Well, they can engineer that by Max Verstappen following team orders. He overtook Sergio Perez, but couldn't get any further. Couldn't take on the Ferraris or Fernando Alonso, who we will talk about in a moment, by the way. I know I've skipped him out. But let's talk about that crazy storyline afterwards with the team orders, which Max Verstappen just absolutely defied, and very quickly on the radio was chiding his team, saying, "We've talked about this. I'm not doing it. I'm not following team orders." Sergio Perez, a brilliant number two driver, and no doubt in very fortunate to have worked his hard work to get into that seat, but he knows he's in a really good position, paid very well, and in a car that can win races. It's the dream gig if you know you're not quite as good as Max Verstappen. But he was furious on the radio today. So much so that Christian Horner apologised to him for Max Verstappen not following team orders and swapping the places back when they crossed the line. Alex, I know you've got some really strong feelings about this, particularly what Perez said as well. Do you want to jump in?
Yeah, it's just, first of all, what a spectacular own goal.
Yes.
For a team that has totally dominated the season, has won both championships wrapped up with rounds to spare. How utterly bizarre that they've let this happen. The thing that's particularly sort of riled me up is that Perez quote where he says, "Max has won two championships and it's down to me," or sort of paraphrasing, that's essentially what he's saying there. That's quite disingenuous, Sergio. I do think you have a point about Abu Dhabi 2021. I know that if you add up all the time that Lewis Hamilton lost while fighting Perez in that amazing defence, it doesn't quite add up to enough time to guarantee that that's actually what won Verstappen the title. But if Perez doesn't do that, I think Mercedes have more than enough time to call Lewis Hamilton in, and he's the one who's got the new tyres available at the restart. So Perez absolutely was key to Max Verstappen winning the 2021 world title. The second one, are you kidding me, Sergio? Is this all down to the fact that you pressured Leclerc to go off in Japan and that's where Max secured the title? Because I really don't think you had a lot to do with how Max Verstappen won his second title. He destroyed the competition. He destroyed Perez. Like, that's a really weird comment for Perez to make. Anyway, that's one thing. The other thing is the whole team orders gate. How on earth have they let this happen? And I'm sure, we'll come on to explain that in a bit more detail, but it all goes back apparently to the Monaco Grand Prix and Sergio Perez's crash in qualifying and the implication that other people, I think it's Eric van Haren, Dutch journalist from De Telegraph, explaining that that's what has infuriated the Verstappens. There was that weird Jos Verstappen column that came out after Monaco being like, oh, Red Bull should have backed Max and he would have won that race. And it all centres, it seems, on this crash, which the suggestions are it was done deliberately by Perez. Now, if that's true, that's pretty outrageous if he did that to protect his position. You know, Michael Schumacher parking at the Raskas, the same track. His sporting integrity is awful there. It definitely wouldn't have stopped Verstappen getting pole. I think Leclerc was well clear in Monaco in pole position, but Verstappen was on course to get ahead of Perez on the grid. And if things play out as they do in the rain and with Ferrari being a total shambles, then it is Verstappen that wins that race. So it seems that that's where all the furies come from. But like I said, it's just a total own goal. I just don't understand how, as a team, you can't have a driver defying you like that and then so publicly making this all come out. It's really odd. Just for what it's worth, also, I thought Leclerc was pretty disingenuous as well, asking Sainz to give up his podium. It just came off as a bit sort of like underwhelming, really.
Sainz said he would have given it up. Sainz said afterwards he would have swapped places.
Fair enough.
Go on, Carlos. What a nice guy. I mean, he doesn't have to do it, so it's fine.
I mean, maybe he's just beaten down after the year he's had, but ESPN F1 tweeted out a list of times when Perez has helped Verstappen. They said Monaco overcuts Hamilton to sixth place. Max wins it. Baku doesn't allow Hamilton to pass him all race, and at the second start, Hamilton goes long and ends 16th. France, due to position, makes Hamilton not go in the pits, therefore Max catches, passes, and wins the race. Silverstone took the fastest lap off of Hamilton. Turkey, Perez defends and leaves Hamilton back in fifth, whereas Max comes home second. Austin makes Hamilton do a pit stop too soon to prevent the undercut. Max wins. Brazil takes the fastest lap from Hamilton. Abu Dhabi holds him up, making Hamilton skip the pit stops not to lose a position. ESPN pointing out, look, all the times that Perez has effectively either taken one for the team or just done his job as a number two driver. Luke, what's...
All those examples are from 2021, though.
Okay, well...
So that just backs up my point.
Yeah,
like, well done, Sergio. You were really helpful last year.
Last year.
Were you really, really helpful this year? Like, yeah, he moved over for him a couple of times when Max was definitely quicker, what, in Spain and Baku, but come on.
Yeah, now, look, Luke, I understand when people sometimes don't always get on board with like the Max's personality when he comes across as not a team player, but he's also a double world champion. Max Verstappen, literally born into motorsport, is wired like this. Surely, is it not his fault that he would defy team orders? What do you think, Luke?
It's all over sixth place, though. That's the thing. Yeah. That's what is so baffling. This is a driver who's won 14 races this year. He's won the world championship with a record number of points. Undoubtedly, one of the best seasons we have ever seen in Formula One. What on earth does he gain by this? He gains absolutely nothing by, showing he's the alpha, showing that it's his team. We know that. He's shown that on track all the way through this season. And that is what really baffles me about all of this. Like, I'm all for drivers wanting to stand their ground and say, look, no, I don't agree with this or something like that, or resisting what their team is doing. But like, when you look at, maybe Vettel and Leclerc at Ferrari in 2019, that was sort of basically who is going to define the future of this team. Who is our man moving forward? There's kind of something to fight over there. For this though, that just I don't get it. And it does sound like it all, as Alex said, dates back to Monaco, and this is about payback. Verstappen said that it was related to something in the past. He didn't really mention, he didn't give any specifics as one would expect. He said it was about something in the past, and that now it's all been talked about and it's all cleared up and it's out in the open, and he'll definitely help Perez in Abu Dhabi. Why on earth have you held on to this anger for, what, five and a half, six months? Like, for all of the sort of backslapping and, yeah, we're a great team and we work really well together that we hear out of Red Bull at times, Verstappen sat on this for 6 months. He stewed on this for 6 months. And it's fortunate, I think, for Red Bull, this didn't blow up in a more spectacular way, that it wasn't fighting one and two, and then we see a sort of Weber Vettel Turkey 2010 repeat or something like that, that it was only P6 that it all came down to. And I think ultimately, yeah, Perez, I think, yeah, this year hasn't been as good and as helpful in terms of helping Verstappen. I think he's been a step forward in terms of his own performance, but he's not really been needed to be the sort of dutiful teammate that he was last year. But I think that for Max, I just don't understand. What does he gain from all of this? And it just does seem to all come down to, is it about sort of power plays? Is it about like who calls the shots? I don't know. And who runs the team? Who is anyone bigger than the team? Is Verstappen, the man who is giving Red Bull all of this success, bigger than the team? If he doesn't want to talk to Sky, does that mean Red Bull as a whole do not talk to Sky Sports? I don't know. It's stuff that I think Red Bull really needs to work out, because they've got this incredible talent, once in a generation talent, who could rewrite all of the record books as he has done through so much of this year. And then he does something like that, and it's like, I just don't see what he gains from it. It's really, I think it's just put a bit of a sour note on what has been otherwise a pretty exemplary, blemish-free year for Verstappen. He's been fantastic right the way through. And then he does something like this, and you're like, oh, why? Like, I just don't see what he gains from it. So, yeah, very, very strange. I think a sad situation for Perez, because obviously he wants that P2 in the championship, and Red Bull have said, yeah, we'll help him. Horner said on the grid that we'll do what we need to do to help Checo get P2 in the championship should the situation arise. Saying to Max, after your race has already been ruined, you're going to finish 7th instead of 6th, surely that's okay. But maybe, as you say, Martin, maybe it comes down to just how Max is wired, that no, he has to win everything. He has to be at the front. He has to get the maximum result. That's fine. But honestly, they've got another 2 years of this lineup if Perez sees out his contract. And this is a big, big fracture that is going to take more than Max saying, oh, we've talked about it, I'm over this thing that I wasn't over for 5.5 months. It's all okay now, and I will help him in Abu Dhabi. But they've got a lot of work to do, I think, to fix this relationship, because that is a real, real big thing for them to have had today.
I was reminded of the front cover of F1 Racing magazine, which we now call GP Racing magazine. In May 2013 issue of F1 Racing, we put a picture of Sebastian Vettel on the front cover, split down the middle of his face, one half his face, the other half Darth Vader. And with the headline we put on F1 Racing was "The Dark Side of Vettel. First Senna, then Schumacher, now it's Seb you'll love to hate." You know, now, obviously, Twitter was around, social media was around in 2013, not as as it is now, so people can't instantly make their hot takes like they do now. This is just, it's multi-21, isn't it? It's just, it's team orders, and it's, you know, I'm not going to do it. And for that, I respect Max for being a winner and a racing driver, but as Luke just said, like, it's not because he could have got the win. It's not because he could have broken more records. It's not because he could have scored big points. It's not because the championship was on the line. It's all wrapped up. Just be the good guy. Think about your legacy and think about what people think. Oh, you know what? He doesn't care. He's not that kind of guy that needs the public to adore him, is he? I mean, how did you read it, Hayden?
Yeah, totally. I mean, you bang on. He doesn't care. He doesn't care what we think. He doesn't care what you think. I mean, well, we say that, although he does care what some people think, because then he won't speak to them. But it is one of those, yeah, where he had basically nothing to gain apart from the point to prove. Now, this is very speculative from my side, because I think the scenario is unlikely to ever unfold, and Perez would certainly need to do a lot of improvement. But say the shoe is the other foot next season, and say he needs Perez to step aside in a title fight situation or a very, very tense, critical point. What if Perez goes, you know what? I remember Sao Paulo 2022. I'm not going to do it. And yeah, it totally backfires on him. It's just so unnecessary. But
Perez won't do that though, will he? Because he's got...
He wouldn't have done it before, but now he has credence to. Now he has justification. Like, say if he's fighting for the title. Say if they're both fighting for the title next year or something in that scenario. Yeah, he's clearly upset by this. And with it, he's being forced to, or whatever, sort of become the true number two driver, and clearly no driver wants that tag. But that's sort of where he's being pushed into, and it's just so unnecessary, and it's almost laughable, really. But this is, as you say, this driven mentality from Team Verstappen. I'm trying to think of a clever wordplay, but it's not come to me yet, of blending Red Bull into Verstappen's name. But basically, it is, yeah, he's trying to make it Team Verstappen. It already sort of is nicest way possible.
I've said it countless times on Sunday Night Podcast. That's the way you're going to win world championships, if you're in a title fight against a team like Ferrari, who give equal to their drivers. That's, if you want to be ruthless, like it or not, like the way that Red Bull go about their business or not, that's the way you're going to win. So if you've got someone of his talent on your team, you don't want Hamilton Rosberg all over again.
This is the thing. I think Hayden's right. Verstappen has created a needless risk here that Perez might do something in the future, you know, sort of maverick and not play the team game. And it just seems to be so odd. But if Verstappen feels so fiercely about this Monaco qualifying crash, as it's suggested he has been, I think Sky asked him directly and he sort of half smiled and goes, well, you make your own mind up, which is a sort of non-denial denial. But with that, if that's true, that Perez did that, then it needs to be investigated by the governing body. And if he didn't, then Perez needs it. You know, it's an outrageous sort of, you know, thing to be saying about Perez. So nobody benefits from this all coming out in public, apart from us, because we love a good scandal. But there we go. Just with Red Bull, though, this is one of their historic weaknesses. They just seem to have they don't seem to have full control over their top stars. You mentioned multi-21 there, Martin, quite correctly, because that, again, was a just totally bizarre bit of driving from Vettel and decision-making, and it undermined the team and made them look weak. And I think he was thinking about Mark Webber squeezing him down the inside at this very track in Brazil in 2012, you know, where he had that, the third title that he won, the one against Fernando Alonso. That's what he was thinking about in multi-21. But just, yeah, they just don't seem to be able to totally have control of the situation. The Lewis Hamilton, Nico Rosberg thing got out of control, but Mercedes were very firm with what they did. Red Bull just don't seem to be able to do that. And then, you know, Daniel Ricciardo left because he felt it had become Verstappen's team and things like that. I don't know, just it's something that I think Red Bull would do well to get on top of, to make it clear that no one is above the team. If Verstappen keeps winning titles, if Red Bull keep winning Constructors' Championships, don't have any reason necessarily to do that, other than they will have these random flashpoints come up and it won't look great for them.
Let's move on. And I'm fully aware that we skipped out Fernando Alonso. And before we started recording, I said, Luke, you're going to have to tell me, because I wasn't paying attention to him and how he ended up a brilliant fifth in that Alpine, the team that he's leaving, the team that he can't get out of quick enough after yesterday's quotes to the media. I don't know, be careful what you wish for, because that was a great fifth place today. But last time I checked, he was starting near the back of the grid and he pops home fifth. Luke, how did he do that?
Yeah, it was a great display by Alonso, and I think proof again that Aston Martin might have signed a 41-year-old, but they're probably getting one of the best drivers on the grid for next year. It was a really, really good drive from him. And yeah, as you say, he started obviously way down the order after the Alpina instance with him and Ocon yesterday that Otmar Szafnauer was so angry about and said they'd let the team down. The fight against McLaren for P4 obviously is so close and stuff like that. It was just a needless exercise, really throwing away such a good grid position for the race. But then Alonso came back into it really, really well. I mean, he was only sitting, 12th after sort of the opening stages and that first safety car. But but then it was an early pit stop that ultimately sort of put him on the right trajectory. We saw how powerful the undercut was. So by coming in early for his first and second stops, he was getting a good jump on this, on the other cars around him. But then what really saved his race actually was the fact that we did have that late virtual safety car, which turned into a full safety car. That meant that Alonso was able to come into the pits, only lose a handful of positions, four positions, instead of dropping further down the order, and that the field was nice and bunched up. So he had a fresh set of softs. He could fly his way up the order and pick off Esteban Ocon. Obviously, there was a bit of back and forth on the radio with Ocon, him saying, "Look, I don't want to just let Alonso pass. Let me try and overtake Vettel first and then I'll do it." And that's exactly what happened in the end. And to then pick off Perez, to challenge the Ferraris as well, the Ferrari of Charles Leclerc. It was a really good drive from Alonso. So I think he's probably a lot happier today than he would have been yesterday, obviously. I think it's been a good response from him and Alpine. I think that you look at where things were against McLaren, 3, 4, 5 hours ago before this race started. It looked like they could throw away P4 basically over their drivers, getting too close in a sprint race. Now though, McLaren's double DNF, really good drive from Alonso, Ocon up in the points as well. It's looking wouldn't say comfortable, but I think the gap's sort of 14 points or so. Let me check my numbers. It is 19 points. So that's looking pretty good for Alpine. And I think that, they've done well to fight back as they did. And Alonso, a little bit of fortune, obviously, with that safety car coming when it did, but a really, really good drive from him again as well. And I think Aston Martin, they're onto a winner with him for next year.
But is he onto a winner with them to begin with is an interesting question. No doubt they have big ambitions. Coming home 10th and 11th today. Stroll in 10th and Vettel in 11th. Had some fantastic moves and was racing really well all weekend, this weekend, with a level head at times over the weekend as well. Luke, just quickly, I don't know if you do know, but what's the deal with things like the driver swaps come Abu Dhabi testing afterwards? You're going to stay around in Abu Dhabi, aren't you, to watch the post-season test? And what's the deal with drivers like Alonso being released? Is he, and will we see him in different coloured overalls?
We will. Probably not green overalls. Okay. I reckon he's probably going to be wearing sort of Stig-style all-white overalls because, he won't officially be an Aston Martin driver until January 1st, I believe. But, there's agreements in place. So Alonso will be testing the Aston Martin in Abu Dhabi at the end of the season. Pierre Gasly will be driving the Alpine ahead of his move there next year. Nick De Vries, he'll be in the AlphaTauri car as well. And it'll be a good chance for basically all of the teams, if they can get in an incoming driver early, then they will do that. Oscar Piastri, we know that's been agreed as well. That was revealed by Adam Cooper for Autosport earlier this week. So it's I think everyone's happy on that front. And it's kind of one of these things where it's like, you know that there's not a huge amount in terms of what they can gain, because obviously testing is precious in F1, but it's still this year's car, and it is more about, okay, how do you learn about getting used to the team and trying out the car and saying, well, I don't like the button on the steering wheel here, or I want my seat in a slightly different sort of like level or something, I don't know. But it's just a good chance for them to get a bit of time to get used to their new surroundings and stuff. But yeah, basically everyone who is moving teams for next year, you'll see them with their new teams in the Abu Dhabi test. We're still waiting obviously to find out who's going to get that second Haas seat. We should find out by the time that we get to Abu Dhabi next week, I think. And they said they want that sewn up before the race in Abu Dhabi, so they can get whoever is in the car, if it's Mick Schumacher or Nico Hülkenberg, in the car for the test.
So Ocon was 8th, Bottas was 9th, I mentioned Stroll and Vettel, 10, 11, Zhou in 12th, followed by home by Mick Schumacher, the fast starting Mick Schumacher this weekend, Pierre Gasly staying out of trouble, just about actually, well no, not staying out of trouble, but importantly, no penalty points, so we'll see him racing again, Alex Albon 15th, Latifi 16th, Yuki Tsunoda classified 17th, some weirdness around the sporting regulations. Lapped cars may now overtake Yuki, but you're not allowed to pass under the safety car. But actually, they got it right. I don't think I've read it several times now. Our friend and colleague Chris Medland has put a full explanation online for why he shouldn't have been allowed, because he re-passed in the pit lane. He passed the safety car. The computers were right. He wasn't allowed to repass. But anyway, I'm still slightly confused. Formula One doing what it does best, which would be really confusing at times. Alex, your thoughts on any other outstanding drives or drivers of mention before we finish up the podcast today?
Just quickly on that Tsunoda thing. Very, very bizarre incident in just that, because the cars are actually allowed to go at full speed in the pit lane entry and the exit, he was ahead at the timing line. So that's where all this confusion has come through, sort of thing that the FIA probably needs to develop a system to make sure it can't happen again. But actually, according to Mattia Bonasso, it played a part in why they didn't ask Carlos Sainz, or as you say, he said he was up for doing it, why they didn't swap the positions around. Because actually Ferrari thought they were under investigation for a sort of safety car infringement regarding Tsunoda, and that sort of was all factored in, and they were just like, ah, it's just too risky, let's not do it. But yeah, very, very bizarre. Also not great look from the FIA to not let all the lapped cars pass once again after we saw in Abu Dhabi in 2021. But there we go.
Ouch.
I think just a word on Kevin Magnussen. I think and also, you know, this the whole sprint race, you know, the third one of the season, it was the best one by far. I know that because I didn't watch it live. I was in a charming pub in Hackney Wick, and I got text messages from both Autosport chief editor Kevin Turner and Matt Kew about the sprint race, which tipped me off that it must have been a good one. So much so that I watched it when I got home and was quite vociferous in my judgments on the various incidents because of what I'd got up to. No, I'm kidding. Actually, that did happen. But anyway. The best sprint so far. Again, it's still an open, like, is it really good for F1? I think various circumstances conspired here to produce the interesting things that happened. You can't necessarily say it was all because of the sprint race that the great things happened at this race. But at the same time, you can't also deny that it being a factor made those things happen. Just Kevin Magnussen getting pole position. Brilliant result for him. Brilliant result for Haas. A very likeable team, you know, Gunther Steiner, what a character for Formula One, what a story for Kevin Magnussen jumping in, you know, in place of Nikita Mazepin, doing excellently this season. Has gone missing a few times, I think, it would be fair to say. But he's certainly made his mark with that historic pole position. So well done to him. And just a real shame that ultimately, even though the sprint race sort of went as you'd expect, fell back because the much faster cars came by him. Just really unfortunate and not at all his fault for being taken out of the main event.
Yeah, Aidan, you are the editor of autosport.com. Good reasons to stay tuned to the homepage over the next couple of days, because stuff always comes out. People say things, decisions get made, like Alfa Romeo just been fined €1,000 for having a team member very close to, I think it was the Haas pit. I did watch that replay. It was picked up on the F1 TV. I watch it on the app most of the time. And a I thought, that's a weird position for a team member to be standing, almost applauding. It was weird. I was like, what are you doing?
I wish he was applauding.
It was like
that,
a slow clap.
Very strange.
He was like a slow clap that he was doing as the Haas car came in. I'm like, what are you doing nowhere near your Alfa Romeo pit box? They've been fined €1,000 for a team member not being where they should be. Stay tuned. That's the right thing to say. Keep your eyeballs on autosport.com. What's coming up over the next couple of days that we should look out for? Driver ratings, of course, sometime tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. Driver ratings. Picking apart how Russell went on to that fantastic win and the first win of his Formula One career. And then picking apart the bones of the Grand Prix. And yes, I'm sure Verstappen versus Hamilton, Verstappen versus the world will be talked about in earnest. And explaining how Yuki Tsunoda ended up in the middle of the pack, lapped but not lapped. It's very much a "what are you doing here" expression, as I was thinking. But yes, it strange one. I don't think it puts anyone in particularly a glorious circumstances, but thankfully nothing too disastrous happened. Except poor old Yuki ended up finishing basically last.
He was last, yeah, last of the classified finishers. Before we go, Luke, what's your thought on half points? Just generally.
Half points?
What's your thought? Just generally.
Is there any context to this?
Because all year you were the first to say,
I know where this is going.
Lewis Hamilton in a Mercedes can win a Formula One race this year. Long before it was fashionable to say such a thing. And we've held you to it all year. Now, last time out on the podcast, you went, look, I don't think that's going to happen given the last two races. Well, Mercedes did, and Lewis came second.
But so. Lewis didn't, so I don't
know. Yeah, that's not half. That's sorry, Mason. That's not half points. That's a zero.
That's what? A zero, yeah.
That's definitely a half point situation.
I appreciate you fighting my corner, Martin. No, he didn't win.
He said Lewis Hamilton, not George Russell.
Yeah.
In a Mercedes.
Sorry, George. Yeah, I think we can. Yeah, I think I will be taking the L, is how the kids call it.
Oh, you still got Abu Dhabi. Don't be so down.
I don't know. Yeah. I think that probably won't go Mercedes' way, but I could be wrong. Let's see. Toto Wolff actually said after the race, he was asked, would you prioritise Lewis going into Abu Dhabi to try and keep his win stat going? And Toto said, well, no, Lewis has already said he doesn't really care about it. But I do, Toto. So yes. Come on. Come do it on, for the Toto. Podcast. Do it for me.
We know he listens. Come on, Toto. Make sure you do. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast today. Make sure you stay tuned. We've got some good shows coming up over the next few days, including we talk to McLaren and we get an inside look at their control centre back at base in Woking and how they run races from thousands of miles away. All thanks to modern technology. That and lots of other things to stay tuned for next week on the Autosport podcast. Thanks for listening and we'll see you on the next one.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner. Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Hi, I'm Tim Hammerich. Looking for your next podcast? Check out the Fresh Cow Files from Zoetis, where we'll discuss hot industry topics, including antibiotic stewardship, employee training, transition cow periods, and more.
The more you train employees, the better they're at making decisions for the well-being of animals.
So if you're ready for some eye-opening insights, I sincerely hope you'll join us on the Fresh Cow Files, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Sports Social Podcast Network.